You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia, Manny.
Back at it. Is ever going to be botard?
Sorry?
Botard.
Botard?
Yeah.
Not if you keep on asking me to show up at 8 o'clock in the morning to do these shows.
You're the one always suggests to do it first thing in the morning. I mean, I'm surprised that we're not doing it at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Listen, I'm up early.
I know. We're in construction.
There's two sixes
in the day. We're not like office workers.
I make the lunches for the kids.
It takes time to do all that stuff.
Sure,
you
got
to wake up early and you can't be distracted.
Prosciutto sandwiches don't make themselves, man.
You got exactly it. So it's good to see you. It's always good to see you in the bon dia. That's at the point, right? It's all good.
Well, yeah, man.
Today, what are we talking about?
Well, a little different from our last couple shows. Today, we're going to continue with our education component here, just for everybody out there who doesn't or isn't fully aware of the different enforcement agencies. So our topic today is fines and enforcement.
So there's a bunch of agencies that are associated with this.
Well, listen, when it comes to health and safety, the Ministry of Labor is definitely the most powerful enforcement agency in this province. But there are other agencies, government agencies, that conduct inspections or can lay fines and charges.
Yeah, you were telling me off mic, WSIB, we didn't know. I didn't know.
I didn't know that either.
That they can lay fines.
They can lay fines. I think it's up to $100,000 or something like that. $50,000 to $100,000. Something along those lines.
And that was ESA on their as well, too. Well, we know about the ESA. They actually post them.
Yeah, and they do administrative fines. And keep in mind, you got fines and penalties, and the penalties could be a stop work order and shut down your project. Right? Until this is repaired or this and that. You know, I think I've shut down projects. Maybe the longest I've shut down a project is a week or 2 weeks. Maybe two.
For them to get the issue addressed?
Yeah.
It took them that
multiple
long?
Multiple issues.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Again, you don't want to keep a project shut down. Obviously, that impacts a lot of workers. You know, you can't make money if you're at home.
Nope.
Right? So you got to look at it from the perspective of the workforce, too. But on that same perspective from the workforce, you need to make sure everything is safe on a project.
Yep.
Right? So we have a few different enforcement agencies, fines and enforcement, that we're going to be talking about today. Okay, so we have kind of the top ones. We have the Ministry of Labor. We have
MLTSD.
I may have spelled that wrong. MILTSD or there's an I in there somewhere.
I don't know. Okay, all right, sorry. So
it used to be Ministry of Labor. Now it's Ministry.
Combine all these. Will it be the all 26 letters or what? Like I don't understand.
I don't know how far they're going to go down with this one, man. it's a different world these days. There's a lot of letters, man. But acronyms is always a big thing in safety, and as you can see, all of these enforcement agencies have a nice little acronym to them.
All of them do.
Well, except WSIB, which in itself is the acronym.
I just know some trace people don't even know how to spell WSIB.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak to that, man. I can.
Then you have the ESA, electrical.
All right, okay. We have the Electrical Safety Authority. Then we have TSSA, which is the Technical Standards and Safety Authority. These are the guys that inspect, like, the CNE. They inspect elevators. They inspect propane facilities.
I would like to say that they do that. I don't think they do much, but...
Well, remember Sunrise propane explosion and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
That would fall under...
You know, so that's what I meant, is that they get involved after something happens. They don't get involved proactively.
How proactive they are, I guess.
They're not very.
I can't speak too much for TSSA. To be honest with you, I don't even know anybody that works there.
And then you have the MTO, Ministry of Transportation.
Those are everyone's favorite, especially if you have a fleet of vehicles and you have CVOR.
Right? Yellow stickers.
Those are the ones. We require you to do an inspection.
You got a lot of people driving around this city, probably Canada, with those yellow stickers that are invalid. I'm just saying.
It costs money to maintain your CVOR.
That's why.
It costs time to maintain your CVOR. That's why. And some of these reports that we've been watching recently in the news and stuff like that regarding drivers and counterfeit documentation.
Oh, you mean the payoffs and regarding getting licenses and, yeah, all kinds of stuff like that.
You know, and so you start looking at different types of drivers. You start looking at the maintenance of these vehicles. You know, how roadworthy are they really? I think MTO has been doing some recent blitzes lately, and they've been taking off like 30 to 40% of the vehicles that they've been finding.
That's a lot.
It could be less. Maybe it's 20%, but it's definitely more than 10%.
That's a lot. Right?
Without pulling up the article and looking exactly, but I think it was 62 charges laid, and out of the 17 vehicles, 8 were taken off, something like that.
So but this is just Ontario.
There's more. There's definitely some more enforcement agencies.
But every province has its own. Every territory has its own.
Yeah, right? So every province has its own version of the Ministry of Labor.
Yeah.
Right? This is all provincial enforcement agencies.
Okay. All right.
All right. So when it comes down to fines and enforcement, we're going to be looking strictly from the perspective of the Ministry of Labor. Yep. And what types of fines and what types of penalties, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just going to kind of highlight that. Like I mentioned, the Ministry of Labor is the most powerful enforcement agency in this province. They don't carry guns. But the reason that they're the most powerful enforcement agency is that they can enter any workplace and seize anything.
That's true. They don't need permission.
No. To enter a
workplace. They don't need documented permission either.
No.
They just need a suspicion of something.
They don't need suspicion of anything.
They don't need. They could just. They'll enter free willy.
Hi, is there a worker here? Yeah. Okay, great. I'm here. We're doing an inspection. Right? So it comes down to a workplace. And that's the only place where the Ministry of Labor has that power.
And I know on a future episode, because you were talking to me about DMing, the whole remote working.
Yeah.
That might be an interesting conversation on a future show.
Yeah. Listen, if, you know, working from home, and now does the home become your workplace? And if I get injured at home, does WSAB cover it? How does the employer ensure hazards are controlled in your home?
What if you have a meeting at home and you invite other workers to come to your home base now, which is your remote location?
There, if you spend a lot of time thinking of all the potential scenarios that can happen in a situation like this. But there are some areas that need to be more clearly defined.
Yeah, which I'm sure they're rewriting right now.
Oh,
because of the remote, right?
They're definitely tackling it. Keep in mind, the remote work happens more at different levels. Like, there's no remote work for illegal workers. There's no remote work for, you know, self-employed businesses and stuff like that. And construction.
Yeah.
Right? When it comes down to construction, keep in mind, during COVID, we were all working.
We were all on site. Essential services.
Yeah, we were the essential ones. I guess all the non-essentials were home. I don't know how that worked.
Some of them are still.
We might have to have a whole other episode on what's going to happen when the next pandemic comes down the pipeline.
It ain't going to happen in this generation, because I think that they've already spent that card, as someone said on the show that I've done recently.
It's quite possible, you know.
We'll see. But the thing is that a lot of people were enjoying themselves remote working, but it's a fine line. And I'm sure that you should have, just do your homework. We'll do it on a future show. Speak with your insurance. It's no different than, a lot of people don't realize that they don't have flood insurance when it comes to a basement application. Sometimes they'll get a blanket on their home insurance, but then if you get a flood in your dwelling, it may not be covered.
I don't even want to talk about insurance.
So I'm just saying that you need to have a conversation with your insurance, going, listen, I'm actually remote working now.
Yeah, but whether or not your insurance covers it, and exactly, whether it's a WSAB coverage, is, you know, only
you WSAB. You need to get these answers. That's on you now to figure it out. But as you said, I think they are rewriting it.
I hope so. Listen, again, we're getting off topic here.
Yeah, no. But, let's stay on course here.
But again, workplaces are changing. You can work from your vehicle. You can work from home. You can work from your office. You can work from a site.
From everywhere. The cars, right? In the parking lot. All kinds.
The internet has really changed that a lot.
Yeah.
So it's definitely an issue that needs to be tackled. I know that during COVID, I can't remember if it was out in Quebec, an Air Canada employee. I can't remember exactly. There was an employee that got hurt, broke her leg, and then it got deemed as a workplace. So keep in mind, some of these things that happen in other different provinces also bear some weight on how Ontario is going to approach it or tackle the issue, right? Because these issues aren't unique to Ontario.
No.
They're unique across the board in Canada, North America, depending on what the flavor is or what's going on, like COVID. You know, this issue was...
We're probably a testing ground, though, because of the amount of people concentrated.
Well, listen, it definitely opens up for conversations and maybe a revision of some of the regulations, but this is all way above my pay grade. You know what I'm saying? So, Ministry of Labor, powers of an inspector. Inspectors are the enforcement arm of the Ministry of Labor, and their role includes inspection of workplaces, issue of orders where there's a contravention of the Occupational Health and Safety Act or its regulations, investigation of critical injuries, fatalities, work refusals, and health and safety complaints, and recommendation of prosecution. I don't know if I'd use that word recommendation, but the powers an inspector may use to fulfill this role are set out in section 54 to 57. Enforcement may include issuing requirements or administrative orders against an employer or other person. Inappropriate may result in prosecution. So to sum it all up, the Ministry of Labor is the most powerful enforcement agency. They have very broad powers under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. All of these listed here, constructor, owner, employer, architect, supervisor, engineer, worker, director of an or officer of a corporation, licensee, supplier, all of these workplace parties.
That's an interesting one that you were saying. Licensee, a holder of a logging license under the Crown Timber Act. There's a whole other division that just factors into that.
Yeah, so keep in mind.
Well, Ontario, that's a dangerous environment as well, man.
Sure. Listen, man, construction is dangerous. Healthcare, obviously, these last few years can be dangerous. Logging. Right? Farms.
Fishery.
Sure. Industrial. Right? Nuclear, but that falls under federal.
Oil.
Also probably most likely federal.
Yeah.
Right? So the federal guys or the federal government kind of deal with some of these, well, deal with all the things or the workplaces that the Occupational Health and Safety Act does not apply to. So post office, for example, or banks, this would fall under federal jurisdiction. Okay. So to kind of open it up, powers of an inspector, just to kind of give everybody a summary, we got section 54.
Okay.
Entry into dwellings, representative to company inspector, consultation with workers, entitlement to time from work, order for inspections, order for written policies. There are quite a number of sections of this act that deal with powers of an inspector.
Did you read all this?
Man, I've read it. I studied it. I've already forgotten some of it.
Wow. Sections 54 to 57?
Listen, to be a Ministry of Labor inspector, you have to be part lawyer. Yeah. Because a lot of this stuff is in legalese.
Yep.
And you have to kind of understand the applications of it and the different scenarios. But just to kind of give the top overview, an inspector may, for the purposes of carrying out his or her duties and powers under the Act and regulations, enter in or upon any workplace at any time without warrant or notice. Surprise, we're here. Take up or use any machine, device, article, thing, material or biological, chemical or physical agent or part thereof. Require the production of any drawings, specifications, license, documents, records, reports, inspect, examine, and copy the same. Upon giving a receipt, therefore, remove any drawings, specifications, license, document, inspect, examine for the purpose of making copies, extracts therefrom, and upon making copies thereof or extracts therefrom, shall promptly return to the same person who produced or furnished them.
So while they're on site, they're investigating something, they can take any documents, drawings, and or whatever that list is with them as long as they provide copies back or return to them.
Technically, it doesn't even have to be an investigation. It could just be a proactive inspection.
And they can still take these documents and then have it as part of their proactive investigation.
Here, let me put it this way. With the Metron case, we waited outside of this PO box that kind of led us to an office that was staffed by maybe about five or six people for this employer. And we couldn't track down this office location. It took some very good investigative skills to track this down.
This was the corporate office of the company?
Yeah, which was under a residential address, which was connected to a PO box, et cetera, et cetera. And we went there and we seized a whole bunch of stuff. And we walked in and knock, knock, here we go. We're taking this, we're taking that, we're taking this, we're taking that. My manager wasn't too impressed because it all had to go into evidence lockers and gets to get hoisted, but or moved up.
But that's the power that an inspector from the Ministry of Labor
100%.
Has.
That right? Definitely, right? Require the writing an employer to cause any tests be conducted at expense of the employer by a person possessing such special expert or professional knowledge. In any inspection, examination, inquiry, or test, be accompanied and assisted by any assisted by or take with him or her any person or persons having special expert or professional knowledge of any matter. Take photographs and take with him or her any use any equipment materials required for such purposes. So basically, listen, just to kind of put this in summary, there's the list of things that inspectors cannot do is a lot shorter than the things
that they can
do.
For sure.
All right. And without boring everybody, if you want to kind of take a look at powers of inspector, you can do a simple Google search on the Occupational Health and Safety Act. Section 54 deals with powers of an inspector.
And you'll have some light reading that will make you fall asleep pretty quickly.
Well, hey, listen.
Don't do it close to your bedtime.
This stuff excites me. So I don't, you know, well, but a majority of the people.
Regarding constructors, Manny, and workers.
Definitely, if you're going to read this, there's a good chance you'll pass out.
You're going to pass out. I'm going to pass out. Trust me. But it's all there. It's pretty clear. It explains it. And I'm pretty sure, I feel confident that it's applicable to any job situation, site, scenario.
Any workplace.
Yeah.
Any workplace, right? So like we said, the Occupational Health and Safety Act applies to all the workplaces in this province. And those workplaces can be a variety of things, from a hot dog stand to a high-rise project, yep, to a tunnel to a mine, you name it.
Okay.
So let's kind of get into fines. What happens when an inspector is conducting an investigation, and during the course of that investigation, they have found contraventions, and these contraventions are a direct, or the injury or fatality is a direct result of these contraventions.
Yeah.
Right? So these investigations and it can even happen during a proactive inspection where an inspector comes on site, oh, you're missing guardrails, or you're doing this. Okay. We're going to lay some charges here.
Yeah.
Right? So, but keep in mind, the inspector's workload, depending on which office they're out of or what city they're working out of, their workload could be easily 80% reactive and 20% proactive. Right? You go up further up north where construction isn't happening as much as here in Toronto, for example.
It's going to be probably the other way around.
It'll probably be the other way around.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? So, you know, Toronto is definitely the busiest city for the Ministry of Labor, or the GTA at least.
Now, remind me again, I think this is correct. If you are convicted, it becomes a criminal?
No.
No, not always, no. Right? It depends on the severity.
You can get charged
criminally.
Criminally.
It could escalate to that point.
100%.
That's what it is.
Right? So with the Metron case, is the first case where they were charged criminally also. They were charged under the Occupational Health and Safety Act and contraventions of regulations, but then the police always also charged them with criminal negligence. So in some of these investigations now, there is a more... So keep in mind, the Ministry of Labor has more powers than the police in terms of taking statements and investigations and gathering evidence and stuff like that.
What's admissible or how it's admissible?
No. In terms of just gathering the powers. Just
gathering. Okay.
Right. So the police can't walk into any workplace there, or they can't see. Yeah. They even if the police want to talk to you, you can say, I'm not talking to you without a lawyer. In the case with the Ministry of Labor, no.
You have to talk to them.
You have to talk to them or you'll be charged with obstruction. Really? And if you bring your lawyer into the meeting, or the interrogation, or the interview, which way you want to call it, the Ministry of Labor can ask that lawyer to leave.
Really?
Yeah. I've done it a few times. And other inspectors have done it.
So you don't have the same, it's not connected to the charter of any sort?
No. Kind of, well, I'm not saying it's not connected to the charter, but the way the Occupational Health and Safety Act is set up, and the rules that are in there, basically, you're guilty until you prove your innocence.
I remember you saying that.
Right? Wow. Okay. So under the powers of an inspector, if I was charging your company and you came in to do an interview or an interrogation is the word I use, and you bring your lawyer and your lawyer starts saying, oh, don't answer that. Don't say this. Oh, don't say that, this and that. And, da, 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 and your lawyer's taking notes, for example, then the Ministry of Labor investigating officer can seize those lawyer's notes. Thank you very much for taking all those notes. I'll be seizing those notes right now.
They can do that.
And I'd like you to leave this meeting.
Holy cow.
And then turn around to you in this case and say, are you going to provide an answer to my question? No, I'm not going to answer that question. Thank you very much, sir. Expect the charge.
Of obstruction.
Oh. Yeah, man. It gets a little hairy.
So you might as well just...
be safe. Avoid all of that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Don't ever get into that situation.
So let's talk about some fines. So... these fines, these max fines are crazy.
Are we implementing these fines to this level?
Have any max fines ever gone down? No.
I didn't think so. I just,
not that I know of.
No, I didn't. And it's nice that they have these max fines, but I don't see them being enforced.
Listen, how does a small business pay a $2 million fine?
They don't. They fold up shop and end it, and that's it, and open up another business,
and,
right?
And what you just said actually happens a lot.
A lot. Because it's the lesser of two evils, I guess.
Yeah, and it comes down to how you structure your business, too. Like, some of these big corporations, they'll have multiple shell companies,
yeah,
right? And then if that company gets charged, they'll just shut down the company. Who cares?
Go to a different company.
Yeah, we'll shut down that company. We got 17 more companies.
Next day. Simple as that.
Yeah, so there are some shenanigans when it comes to it. There is definitely, you know, these fines are based on what the employer can pay based on the profits that they
make.
Who's
determining the fine amount that actually is being presented in the investigation process?
Well, it's a combination between the lawyers. When it comes down to sentencing, it's a combination between what the lawyers have agreed upon. If there is charges being dropped, you know, drop eight would plead guilty.
Give and take.
Yeah. So they'll negotiate those fines and stuff like that. And some of these judges too, I think it would happen with the Metron case too, where the original fine was only $250,000 to the corporation.
Four lives lost.
Yeah. And then the Ministry of Labor or the Ministry of the Attorney General appealed that fine decision. And then eventually it got booted up to $750,000. Now, that being said,
still four lives lost.
Yes. And that being said, did that company actually pay the fine?
That's the other thing.
I have no idea.
I know you shared something on DMs. You're telling me that on average, what is it? 125 to 150,000 is the value of a life lost.
It's the average fine for one worker fatality.
125 to 155.
It's about your average. $1,000. And keep in mind, these fine structures have changed a lot. I remember when I was there. There's really only two types of prosecutions that happen. Part one tickets, which are like speeding tickets that you get from the police type deal. And part three prosecutions. And part three prosecutions are full binders, evidence, video. When you do a part one, you need to gather evidence too. But the part three is what leads to, like, part one are set fines, and we're going to talk about set fines. And part three is what leads or opens it up to these max fines.
Got it.
Okay. So section 66 deals with fines. Basically a person. Okay. So not a worker, not an employer.
With the situation.
A person who is convicted of an offense under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. Now, again, those persons are workplace parties.
Okay.
May be subject to a fine of up to $500,000 for all other persons and up to 12 months in jail. A fine of up to $1.5 million for directors and officers of corporations and or up to 12 months in jail. Okay. And then a fine of up to $2 million for a corporation. Now, keep that in mind. This is per charge.
Oh.
Hence the I'll drop eight charges you plead guilty on two.
So, yeah, gotcha.
Right? Okay. But with the Metron case, I put forward 62 charges.
So four of them were the fatality, but there was a bunch, 54 other charges.
You know, some of the charges range workers not having training.
Yeah.
Workers not having fall protection equipment.
So it just added more and more and more.
Oh, yeah. Everything I can find.
What was the final outcome, though? How many charges?
750. And then the supervisor.
No, but how many charges stuck out of the?
I'm not exactly sure, to be honest with you. I left the MOL before the whole court case got
wrapped up.
Yeah. But, you know, keep in mind that supervisor is the first time a supervisor has gone to jail for criminal negligence. Right? He did 3 years or 3.5 years. But again, where did he do 3.5 years? Was it a weekend thing? Who knows, man? Yeah, you know, news these days, people getting charged for murder and then out on bail the next day. So
it's a different story.
I don't know, man.
We don't know. Like you'd like to think that it's changing things, but we don't know.
Listen, $150,000 is still a lot. You know, $200,000, $300,000. Lawyer fees is easily $600-$700 an hour.
You're in about the same amount that you're going to pay for the fine.
All right. Shutdown of your project, delays, this, that, you know, WSAB costs, right? A lot of things add up really quickly in these situations, right? And then they charge a 25% victim surcharge fee on top of everything.
25? On top of everything. So the 750 goes right to, basically it goes to
that, that number may have included, included the victim surcharge fee. Okay. But it's the fine plus a 25% victim surcharge fee. So they say the money is supposed to go back to helping victims. It could be that that money is being collected and used for like Threads of Life or something. Who knows?
We don't know exactly.
I have no clue.
Yeah.
I have no clue. And the Ministry of Labor kind of washes their hands once the judge sets the fine. And then it kind of falls on the municipality to collect
those funds. It's no longer the court's issue.
Well, once it gets its way through the court's issue, it becomes a collection issue.
Yes.
Right? You don't pay your ticket. They send it to a collection agency. They send you letters and stuff like that. But if you're a corporation and you got this fine outstanding and you've declared bankruptcy or shut your business down, whatever reason, how do they collect that? I have no idea.
See, that's a whole other world. At first, you're seeing the fatality. Then you're seeing the investigation. Then you're seeing the court. Then you're seeing the convictions. And then you have the collections. But nobody ever talks about the collections. So we don't know if these corporations are paying.
No, it could. And keep in mind the cost to the province, right? The time of the inspector, the salary of the inspector, the time it takes to put the investigations together, the time for the lawyers, the time for the judges, the time for the court, the time, right? All of this adds up. Right? Are you going to do all of this for a $365 ticket? Yeah. Right? From my perspective as the former MOL inspector, you know, did I give tickets out every time? No. You know, I used to be a worker. I understand some of those challenges. Have I seen inspectors, you know, like in one case I was with an inspector doing a site visit and it was lunchtime and there's 10 guys inside of a garage all sitting on their coolers eating lunch. But most of them, all of them didn't have their hard hats on.
You're still on the site, so you're still obligated to wear your PPE.
So the inspector started writing tickets to these guys for not wearing the hard hats during lunchtime. For me, I can't stomach that. So I said, you know what, Mr. Inspector, thank you very much for your time today. I'm heading out. And I left. I didn't even stick around to watch that shenanigans. Hmm. Right? So, but that's my perspective. You know, the law is the law, and, you know, some people argue it should be enforced 100%. Well, listen, I believe in inspector discretion, right? You got to target some things. You got to prioritize some things. And if you're an inspector that's come from the trades,
I think you look at it differently.
You look at it differently, man. You know, it's like, oh, hold on a sec. This guy just had his hard hat off for 2 minutes. You know what I mean? You know, when there's other, like, guys not tied off.
On the roof, that's a different situation. You're having lunch.
Yeah, in garage. Man, like I couldn't I couldn't do that. I wouldn't even be able to sleep doing that.
I get it.
I totally
understand it.
It's happened, right? It's happened, and it is what it is, right? Inspector discretion. Can the police give you a speeding ticket for doing 104 kilometers on the 401? Sure.
I know the photo cameras do that.
Yeah. I'm surprised those cameras have stuck around as long as they have, man.
We don't have the drones from Ireland where they're dropping little
bags. Have you seen those guys in England? They just take the Sawzall and chop them all down.
It's coming. Don't worry. It's coming. Okay, we got it. What else you got to?
All right. So these are just some of the part one tickets. So these are tickets that an inspector can issue right there on the spot. Okay. When I was an inspector, there was only 6 of these tickets and they can only be issued to workers and supervisors possibly. Oh, well, supervisor is also a worker. So give or take, I think there was only 6. Then you can issue summonses and stuff like that. But that being said, these are some of the set fines. These are not all the set fines.
Some.
Okay. So the
they're set all fines, under 650?
So look.
550. Well, I've not seen things in
New so Orleans not being protected by fall protection, $350.
Yeah.
So these are for workers.
Yeah.
Worker working without precaution to prevent falling through an opening, $250. Worker failing to use a ladder that complies with subsection 82, $250. So if you're using an A-frame ladder and it's not fully opened, that's $250.
That's also applicable to ladders that are rated for people 250 pounds and having someone up there that's a little more than 250.
Wait, you know what's crazy? About 4 months ago, I had an incident like that, where a guy weighed 325 pounds and he was on a ladder and the ladder kind of gave out. Worker using defective or hazardous vehicle, machine, or tool, $250. So if you know that your ground is missing on your extension cord and you're using that extension cord, you can get a ticket for it. And a variety of other scenarios, right? Worker using a
But we rip out the ground so we can plug it into the proper power cord bar that doesn't accept grounds. So that's why we do it.
Manny, if I had a dollar.
That's my impersonation of a worker on site that just found the cord that way,
it's
right?
It's not mine. No, well,
he's got the linesman there doing this.
I don't know.
He's just doing this, wiggling it out.
This, you know, that is on the smaller end of the scale. We can easily talk about, you know, an operator of a crane not following the manufacturer's instruction on the maintenance of the crane.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, so it can go from something very small to an extension cord all the way to something as big as an
employer target. Failing to ensure scaffold.
Wait, we're not
compliance.
There yet. We're not there.
Oh, sorry.
Yet.
Okay, you can go through all of them, okay?
I don't want to read all of them.
No.
But
find some key ones, okay?
So these are for workers, the ones on the left. A worker using a loose object as a workplace or a support for an object. So you're standing on a bucket to try to reach somewhere. That's $350. Okay?
But it's a Home Depot bucket.
In that case, then it's $350 plus tax. Worker are using stilts or leg extension devices contrary to Section 116. Huh, wait a sec.
Wait a heck sec.
You can use stilts.
Yeah, they're legal is what I was told.
This one might have been removed.
I thought, unless they're not elite, they're not legal?
No, they are legal, but there's a whole bunch of requirements for it.
But have they been modified?
I don't know.
Because I've seen a lot of guys modify.
We'd have to pull up Section 116 and see what that was.
I've seen guys modify.
Worker working on a wheeled scaffold, a Baker scaffold without brakes being applied. $250. Worker failing to be attached to adequate anchor point on specified elevated work platform. $350. Get too close to overhead electrical wires. $350.
What is it? 3 meters? 10 feet?
Depends on the voltage.
The voltage, okay.
Oh, shit. There's one. Worker failing to work in compliance with Section 195 by using inadequately grounded cord-connected electrical equipment or tools. $350.
I just find these fines too little.
Too little?
I find them fine.
To a worker?
I think so.
That's almost a full day's pay.
I get it, but it doesn't deter.
Well, hey, listen...
That fine was $3,050, then you'd be a little more cautious, I think.
Maybe. The higher the fines, the more cautious.
Why do we speak?
The higher the deterrent.
Everyone knows the 15-kilometer rule. You know what I mean?
What's the 15-kilometer
rule? Reduce it down to 14. No points and a reduced fine.
Well, didn't they just increase the speed limits?
They probably have increased it, but I haven't had a ticket in forever. But when I was younger and I was getting tickets, all I cared about was fighting the court cases to get it down to 14 over.
Sure.
And reduce fine, no points.
You want to go and negotiate? Drop some charges and I'll plead guilty on one.
Yeah, that's the basically story what you're doing. So I'm just saying, if it's a $3,000 fine, you go in and negotiate, but it will leave a residue in you to think twice next time. $350.
Well, take a look at it. You run a stop sign, and I'm going to speak from my experience. You run a stop sign, you get booked, cops write you a ticket. Okay. The next stop sign I'm rolling up to is going to be my best stop ever. And progressively after that,
it becomes your best, worst stop ever.
Well, it'll, you know, after a few months, you know, if you're not attentive, if you're not focused, if you're not paying attention, you're complacent.
Yeah.
These may be some of the reasons why you roll another stop, right? So was the original fine a good deterrent? Maybe it's only a good deterrent up to a certain point in time.
I think we need more roundabouts where we don't have plant and vegetation in the center of it.
Don't even start on me roundabouts. I have a roundabout in my neighborhood. It makes absolutely no sense.
But the problem is with roundabouts is that people do not know how to drive in
roundabouts. Manny, the roundabout in my neighborhood has 4 stop signs.
See, that makes no sense.
0.
You can't add stop signs into a roundabout.
Has 4 stop signs and it's a roundabout with the island in the middle.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
So what happens when everyone comes at the exact same time and this person has to make a left and the other one has to go straight? Who goes first?
It's the problem that people don't know how to merge into a roundabout.
But Manny, someone designed that roundabout. Someone at City Hall got paid a lot of money to design this roundabout and then say, we're going to put stop signs. Just shows that they know nothing about roundabouts.
There's one in Blue West Village. There's another one that has the 4 stop signs and it's a roundabout.
Makes no sense.
And I'm like, I got yelled at by a neighbor. So I was walking by and I was like, I'm sorry, but it's a roundabout. And she's like, no, there's a stop sign. I go, you know what? I saw it as a roundabout first. Right. I saw the three arrows go around. So it's a roundabout.
Well, for me, I first drove roundabouts was in Portugal.
Yeah, Europe.
Because you never see them in North America. But now when they bring them to North America, it's some hybrid version of a roundabout. So a roundabout with four stop signs. I don't know. Boggles my mind.
It's a liberal
roundabout. Someone got paid good money to build
it. Liberal roundabout. That's what it is. All right, yeah. We got to move on. We got to wrap this one up soon.
Okay, so we have a bunch of offenses. These are tickets that can be issued automatically to an employer right on the spot. There's also part one tickets that can be issued to the constructor. So this previously did not exist. There was never any tickets that you can issue to an employer, and there was never any part one tickets that you can issue to a constructor.
This was all new.
This is all newer.
New, okay. As of what, a few years?
I don't even know when these came out, to be honest with you. I'll say maybe 5 years ago, maybe 7 years ago.
Okay.
Something along those lines. So an employer failing to make sure a worker is tied off or protected against falls, $650. Let's see. Housekeeping, $550. Worker, employer failing to provide suitable respiratory protection, $550. No fire extinguishers or failing to provide, $550.
What about inspections of fire extinguishers?
Those inspections would also fall under the duty and responsibility of the owners of those fire extinguishers. In this case, it will probably be the employer.
Exactly.
Right.
They need to be checked every so often. Every 6 months.
It'll be weekly.
Is it weekly?
Well, as an inspection, they have to be done weekly because they fall under emergency equipment.
Yep.
Where are we? No traffic protection plan on site, $550. Failing to provide proper access and egress, $550. Right? So some of these things.
$550. I still think it's too little.
Employer failing to provide non-custom portable ladder that complies with section 80, $550. I think there was a washroom here one. Hold on a sec. Use the vehicle machine equipment. Employer failing to provide a dump truck equipped with automatic audible alarm.
Yeah.
Do you remember how the alarms used to be beep, 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 and then it became the white noise? You never heard those?
Beep, beep, beep was perfectly fine.
I like beep, beep, beep.
It was identifiable as the action.
The white noise one, since it's been implemented, I don't know.
It doesn't work.
I don't think it works.
The beep makes sense. It's the only thing that makes that sound backing up.
Yep.
In my opinion. But then again, $550.
Employer failing to ensure a scaffold complies, $550. And there's a few other ones. And then the constructor ones kind of mirror some of these employer ones. Right? What are we going to do, Manny? There is a recent court case, and we can take a look at it. And a lot of these court cases, I think all of them are actually published online. So the results
of public record.
It becomes public record under Freedom of Information.
Once there's a conviction.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. I really think that when the Ministry of Labor lays charges, those charges should be public record. I'll tell you why. In the criminal side, we arrested this gangbanger and we found these guns and we found this cocaine and we found this, this, and this. And the police have charged this individual with 72 crimes, 72 charges, right? But in criminal, you're innocent until...
Yeah, I get it.
Until proven guilty. With this, you're guilty till proven innocent. If the MOL officer has sufficient evidence to lay charges... and has laid multiple charges, those charges are laid. Now, whether and...
But now they have to be convicted.
But they're guilty, again, the way the Occupational Health and Safety...
But through the inspection process, though, what if we discover...
Investigation process?
Sorry, yeah. So all of a sudden we discover that it wasn't fully that person, whatever. If you publicly announce this, then that person is already labeled guilty.
That crane fell last week.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The crane fell. There's a contravention in there somewhere.
Yeah.
It's done.
But if we publicize the operator of that crane, but during the process of the investigation, it wasn't the operator.
No, keep in mind, the investigation happens first. The charges are determined.
But you're saying that you should publicize from the time that the charges are laid.
I think once, my personal opinion, I think that the charges laid against an employer, right? And the charges are laid between the Ministry of Labor and the Ministry of the Attorney General. Once those charges are laid, that's it. They're laid.
I'll even go further. I think if you have a fatality and you're a developer, you're no longer allowed to develop anymore.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one.
Think about what they will do to avoid that.
I know, but then
you're giving them a free ride to come to the next corporation that they start, the next building that they do, and then they have another fatality.
Listen, that might work, you know, and it might not. And then there's people that argue that, you know, because of something I didn't even do, I'm getting punished for, you know, the constructor, but it was a sub of a sub. There's, I'm sure, arguments for pros and cons to all of this stuff. But when it comes down to fines and enforcement, you know, and how much fines and how much enforcement should be done, you know, depending on your position, you know, a lot of these maybe, you know, maybe an association in construction doesn't want too much enforcement. You know, and there's people that will argue.
Because you need to keep the wheels spinning.
Right. There has to be
It's like the building code. Quickly, in the very beginning of my construction career, someone quickly taught me that a full glass of water at the edge of a table is minimum building code. There's a risk that it could fall over. If you put it in the center of the table, it's pretty safe there. Yeah, but still we built to the minimum standards, so then we can actually get a lot of people building now. If you make them more maximum standards, not a lot of people will be building. But if we're constantly having fatalities and you've got to build, maybe after the third fatality, the developer is no longer allowed to develop anymore.
But every major developer in this province has had fatalities.
So I'm saying, what if you deterred that?
Some multiple.
That's why I keep on saying that the fines are a little, like, if you make your driving with a cell phone fine $10,000 and 1 year suspension, how many people are going to use their cell phones while they're driving? Nobody.
Again, with any law, it has to be enforced.
You have to make it just painful enough to absorb the cause and effect of it, but not painful enough that you'll never deter yourself from doing it.
If they pass laws, okay, oh, you get a $10,000 fine if you're caught using your mobile device while driving, but nobody enforces those laws, that fine can be $1 million.
So it sounds like with the developers and fatalities, you're getting enforcement happening. You're going through the whole investigation process. But like you said on other shows or even this show, you start up a new business. It's a shell corporation.
Yeah. They're
giving them an opportunity to have another fatality.
That doesn't happen with every employer, but the ones that are experienced, like ABC Roofing, which is just, you know, I employ 7 workers or 10 workers, whatever it is. These guys don't have shell companies and NOPs.
And I'll argue stuff. The fact that if you do that, you're going to increase the cost of construction.
You may. But again, safety does cost money.
It's whether the money comes out at the end, right, or it comes out during.
It's like the argument some of these workers or subs of a sub will say, you know, it's not my responsibility to build the guardrails. Dude, man, you're the carpenter. You're putting up the house. There's 300 houses here that are getting put up. Who do you think is going to come here and build the guardrails if it's not you?
No, it's a rough framer's responsibility, right? But I've had framers on the show say, listen, do I do every single one? No. Right?
Well, no. It's evident.
It was just a thought. I just wanted to, I mean, I'm sure that the industry is not going to like it. I'm sure that the builder and developer. No,
again, there has to be a happy balance here too, right?
Happy balance for fatalities that cost $125,000 to $150,000.
Yeah, that's a little unbalanced to me. That's for sure. So
they already know that. Developers already know that. Oh, I lost a life. Oh, it's going to, that condo.
Let's look at this case that I'm putting up. Okay.
Okay.
Let's look at this case and then you tell me if the fine was justifiable.
Okay.
March 4th, 2022, four workers were installing wooden roof trusses on a construction project in Elmer. Okay. The trusses were being installed on top of framed walls. No guardrail protection was present, nor were any of the workers wearing any method of prescribed fall protection equipment. None of the workers were wearing any protective headwear. Okay, so nobody tied off, nobody protected against falls, nobody having any hard hats. One worker was standing on a 2x4 inch wood strapping while nailing wood with a cordless framing nailer. The strapping broke, and the worker fell 5.08 meters from the roof and was struck by the nailer, causing fatal injuries.
So upon impact, the nailer engaged.
He fell, and then the nailer hit him.
So he survived the fall?
It's a fatality.
No, but he survived the fall. But
I don't know that.
Did he die from the nailer, or did he die from the fall?
As read here, 5.08 meters from the roof and was struck by the nailer, causing fatal injuries. It could be that
the nailer caused it.
Right? Okay. Maybe he survived the fall. Again, what's the definition of survive?
5.8, that's 15 feet, right? So
by failing to ensure that the worker was protected by a means of fall protection, Van Houten Contractors, Inc. failed as an employer to ensure that the measures and procedures prescribed under Section 26.12 of Regulation 2134/91 were carried out in the workplace contrary to Section 25.1C of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. Kyle Van Houten, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, failed as a director of Van Houten Contractors to take all reasonable care to ensure that the corporation complied with Section 26.1. So the framers out there are already saying, well, where am I going to put guardrails and how am I going to tie off when I'm doing trusses and stuff like that?
It's always a conversation.
It always is. And this is not an old problem. This is not a new problem. This is an old issue that's been happening for a very long time. And one of the solutions to this is to build work platforms on the inner walls and then stand on the work platforms, mm-hmm. platforms when you're building mm-hmm. your trust. But that work platform takes time to build.
Yep. Costs money.
Where does the wood come from?
But we're talking about workers that didn't have hard hats and didn't have your harnesses.
Yeah, and whether or not a hard hat would have stayed on this worker's head after falling 5 meters, you know, that's debatable.
It's the harness that I have an issue with.
Well, yeah. Listen, guys, let me put it this way. Falls from heights are the number one killer of workers. All right. So this employer failed. This worker is dead.
Okay.
How much do you think the fine was?
I'm going to go back to the 125, 150.
Okay. So that's the about an average, right?
Yeah.
Where is it? Location, description.
Penalty imposed.
Following guilty pleas in provincial offenses court in St. Thomas, Ontario, Van Houten Contractors was fined $85,000. Kyle Van Houten was fined $32,500.
Personally.
Mm-hmm. And the court also imposed a 25% victim fine surcharge. So what does that bring us to? That brings us to a grand total of $117,500 for a worker fatality.
So what was my question? Your question was, do you think that the fine...
Do you think $117,000... Now, keep in mind, the corporation was fined $85,000.
The individual was fined.
The director of the corporation was fined...
25.
Was it 25?
25
or 35?
32,000. 32.5. 32.5. And then a 25% surcharge.
Now, keep this in mind, too. They take into consideration whether or not you can actually pay this fine based on your profits, based on number of workers, based on your business, so they'll accommodate some of these fines to match what you can actually pay.
Okay, so here's my thought process. I think there should be a zero added to all of those numbers. And I think that all possessions that Kyle Van Houten owns should be given to the fallen worker, to his family.
That's a good spin.
That's my thought process. So I don't care if he can't pay it. He owns a bunch of stuff. He owns a house. So he owns a luxury car. He owns a bunch of shit. All that shit just gets transferred right to his wife or his children or his whatever. Because he's gone and he only has to pay 117 and change.
And that's whether or not they actually pay it.
The worker probably makes that after taxes, you know, maybe in 2 years or something like that. But that's it. That's all they're going to get. And that's exactly how you said. That's if they pay it.
That and this is where, even for me personally, I have no way of gathering this
information. I think the Ministry of Labor needs to extend their powers, because I love that they have all these powers, that they can be the governing body that can seize personal assets to get transferred upon a conviction.
Are we adding another letter to the Ministry of Labor? Listen,
you're a financial bounty hunter at that point. I think that starts to deter developers from not looking at this at a lackadaisy kind of attitude where a human being is gone, what that human being was providing, who that human being was providing for, that is all gone now. And then you leave a stain in the industry. So I think that if you add a zero to those numbers and you move all personal assets from the developer, this shit will not happen. That's my opinion.
Well, listen,
is it extreme?
Some people will say that's a great idea. Some people will argue that idea, right? There's always pros and cons to everything. But, you know, like, it's the nature of the company.
This is a norm, though, right? Like, this is kind of a typical norm.
Yeah, so we can go through other ones. Don't get me wrong.
I'm just saying, this is about how it works. You know, you've got, this is all public record, so this is what happened.
Yeah.
This is what the investigation came about, and this is what the court found.
Yeah.
And this is what's going on a monthly basis, whatever, because we have fatalities all the time.
Unfortunately, you're right. We do have fatalities.
The objective with Safety Corner is about awareness and preventing.
100%.
So I'm just making suggestions that are affecting awareness and affecting prevention.
Listen, fines are a good deterrent. It's a part of the check and balance system that we have for any enforcement agency in this province. You know, don't do it or you're going to get caught.
What really hurts developers... You hurt developers not by imposing fines where they've been convicted of something. You hurt developers by taking their money and their assets.
Listen, we had a saying in my team and my crews when we were at the MOL, you want to hurt somebody, you hit them in the wallet.
That's exactly what you do.
Right?
This is not hurting that developer in the wallet. Again, 117.5?
When you say a developer, this may be a small framing company that had six workers. Still right? They're not a developer.
Then he should be the safest company out there.
Oh,
I know, I get it. I get it.
I feel like carpenters are the ones that are the most likely not to tie off. Right? You drive downtown Toronto, drive anywhere where they're building a house in the city of Toronto.
I know.
I'll say 9 out of 10 times, you'll see people not tied off. You'll see guardrails missing. Now, the question comes down to is this sector of construction, infill housing, single homes, small businesses, vulnerable workers, illegal workers, you name it. Infill housing, it has a lot of these variables. So, you know, it's very easy for, you know, these associations and all these places, and we're doing excellent in health and safety, and, you know, everyone's getting awards and pats on the back and congratulations for being this accredited program. And it's great. And I respect all of those associations trying to do their best. And I respect a lot of the hard work that these individuals are doing. But on the flip side of that, when we look at a guardrail system, we don't judge it by its strongest point. We judge it by its weakest point. And right now, that bottom 50%, that bottom 60% of construction employers in this province are facing a lot more challenges. These variables are happening a lot more often. And if anybody even doubts that, just drive around. Go look at houses.
We need to do a future show where I want to actually discuss scenarios that are brought up to you all the time. So we can actually discuss how things could have been done to make it properly safe. Because there are moments in construction in very risky trades that you physically can't get to the regulations.
Okay, so let's talk about
that. That's a different show. No, we got to wrap it up because I got to wrap it up, right?
Man,
that's
the only problem. I got a video here. You want to watch this
video?
One?
Okay, show the video. Show the video and we'll wrap it up from there.
All right. This is a video got sent in to me. This was down in Hamilton. This probably got sent last year or maybe last week. Who knows?
What the? Where are the guardrails on that floor? There's guardrails on the other floors.
This isn't my voice, by the way.
Don't tell me the guy falls. Oh.
Holy fuck.
Why are there no rails on there?
Because it looks like these are the window installers. Or someone, maybe they're putting that blue skin on the outside.
They're actually applying the membrane.
Yeah. Right? And now, you know.
Responsibility and fines.
Who's responsible for that? So number one starts with the worker.
The worker. I was going to say the worker.
Well, number one can also be the employer. Did they provide them the fall protection equipment?
No, it starts with the worker. Then it goes to,
Well, hey, listen, someone has to buy the harness. right? So are the harnesses available? Are they being used? If that worker was to fall,
then who's responsible?
Well, the same people are always responsible.
Yes.
Right? So the responsibility will be if that worker was to fall, the investigation will start with the supervisor of that worker.
Yeah.
100%. And it could be that this is a subcontractor. It could be a sub of a sub on a high-rise building, whatever it may be. But most likely that's what it is. A sub of a sub or, a little bit down the chain a bit. But if this worker was to fall, the investigation would talk to its coworkers. Yeah. The investigation would talk to the supervisor. Yeah. The investigation would look at the employer. Did you provide the equipment? Did you verify that the workers were using the equipment? Did you explain? Were they trained? A whole slew of things that fall under duties and responsibilities of the employer. And then you just keep on moving up to, hey, Mr. Constructor, did you not know that these guys were installing this work? Yes. Did you ask them if they were trained? Maybe. Hey, did you double check that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing? Have you received any complaints about these guys? You start really going into it, right? And the fine for that is $350.
It's not enough. I'm telling you that right now. It's not enough.
How many stories is that? I'll say that's like 20, 30.
It's up there.
One, like two, three, four, five, six, seven.
There's on the fourth section there.
Seven, six, seven, I'll say 30.
You're 30 stories up.
Yeah, easy.
That's going to ruin your weekend.
30 stories not tied off, standing by the look of that 2 or 3 feet from.
But they got to add a membrane. They got to install a membrane. They got to do this. They got to do that. Yeah, I know. I get it. I'm not agreeing with it. So the responsibility, we know who it is. The fines are too low, in my opinion, and things need to change.
Well, listen, there are those people that are argue, this is a high-rise project, and high-rise projects are safer, and they're more well-contained and stuff like that.
Who's saying that?
Well, safety people and builders and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, because it is a vertical construction project, it is easier to control and easier to contain versus a low-rise project that has 500 houses spread out.
Yeah.
One end of the project's 4 kilometers that way or 7 kilometers that way. So that's a little more difficult to control. You got to go into every single house. You got to double check this, double check that, and keep on going. How does an inspector or anybody go through 500 houses in one day? With multiple trades.
You can.
These inspections need to happen, and the constructor and the employer want to verify and make sure that the workers are doing what they've been instructed to do and what they've been trained to do, if any of those things have happened. But like in this case, a high rise, don't get me wrong, a high rise is not that difficult to maintain safety on. Okay? And it's not that difficult. But and some of these constructors, if they saw something like that, that whole crew is gone. Don't even come back to our site.
Some of these constructors, and some. It should be all of these constructors.
It all depends on that production.
Maybe I'm too strict. I don't know. Maybe I'm too strict, but then I haven't seen a dead body on a construction.
Without a hard hat.
Yeah,
You've done worked
it.
At heights without I've being done tied. It. I've been on my roof. I don't tie off. I go clean my gutters.
I know.
I go on my roof and I can already tell you that I'm very cautious, number one, but it can happen. I can fall off my roof and die.
Yep.
Right? So, it's bridging that mentality from the personal side on my personal time. I do parkour and I do this and I do that. And my fear level, just like one of the guests you had on your previous show.
Haven't had enough heart attacks.
You haven't had enough scares or enough heart attacks. And then you come to a construction project and you still have that mentality. Right? Or on the flip side, you come from another country. And where the country you come from doesn't have any rules or regulations, you could go to work in your sandals.
I'm going to add another rule now. I think that any fallen worker on a job site, the rest of the crew associated with that job site needs to go to the wake.
Listen,
they need to see that worker in a casket to understand that last week that worker was on the site beside me. They need to see that.
I can't speak to that, but you know,
that will start changing things.
One thing's for sure, the crews and the people I've interviewed after fatalities, and then, sometimes 5 years later, 10 years later, I bump into someone again.
They changed, right?
Their approach to health and safety is completely different.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. And listen, these things you don't forget. If I close my eyes, I can picture the scene from every single fatality
that's what I've
done. And this stuff stays with you, man. And I know it stays with me. I know that.
But what happens to Norm in that building? That building, if that person were to fall out of that floor and die, next day is business as usual.
Well, the investigation's ongoing. Areas, I mean, I'm generalizing
next day, but eventually all the workers go right back to work.
Eventually everyone goes right back to work.
I think
every
worker should go to that wake. I think they should pay condolences to the family. I think they should respect.
I think respecting your fallen fallen construction workers. You know, we have a day of mourning and we try to remember
once
all
a year.
The, yeah.
Right. But I think if it happens on your job site, the developer should shut down and everybody should go to that funeral.
It's not a bad idea, Manny.
I'm just coming up with ideas, man. That's all I'm just saying. Is it right or wrong? You guys can decide if that's the case. But I think that any of these ideas that I'm presenting, I go back to you. It's about the two things, awareness, prevention.
100%. But awareness, prevention, and enforcement. You know, the path to prevention.
Here's the thing, Phil.
Is double checking and triple checking everyone's homework.
If you create more awareness and you educate prevention, you won't have to worry about enforcement.
No, I disagree. I disagree because
it won't be to the level of what it is today.
The regulations are complex, and a majority of the employers out there don't know all the regulations. Maybe they know the regulations that are specific to them, and that applies to workers, that applies to supervisors. So a lack of knowledge when it comes down to the regulations is a huge thing. Now,
it's a shield, though.
Ignorance? Not in
doctor's office. In their eyes, not in the law. But in their eyes,
the law doesn't
they
care.
They think it's a shield.
Maybe. I don't know what they think. What I can say is that the law does not care whether or not you knew about the law or not.
I know. Ignorance is not. I know.
It is definitely not bliss. I forgot what I was saying.
No.
I forgot what I was saying.
Another good episode. I appreciate it, man.
Fines and enforcement, man. And just before we go off, again, just want to say thank you to all of our clients, all of our teams, everyone that's going day in, day out, ensuring that our clients are safe and prevention is key and making sure everyone's following the rules. And if there's anybody out there that has questions, concerns, if you're an employer, you need help with safety, not only do we have our training and everything like that, but we also have our online system. And we're going to do a whole episode on online occupational health and safety management systems and due diligence. Okay. But we can help you.
That's it. Thanks, Phil.
Manny, thank you very
much. Appreciate everyone. Check them out on Instagram and don't send them anything.
Send me stuff.
Pick and choose your sending.
But listen, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, you know? And sometimes with the effort of providing knowledge, you know, we get things that, you know, could get people in trouble. And so
we'll only share names that have been publicly shared because court cases have been provided.
Oh no. If I'm putting you on blast, it's because you deserve it. I don't care about anything else.
That's it. So we keep on changing rules as we go. Thanks, Phil. That's it. We're out of here. Next episode.
Ciao.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10 plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_s1 for more information.